I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
On this episode of the Oklahoma Breakdown with Eicher and Lehman, presented by Riverwind Casino, the one, the only, Eddie Radosovich joins us to talk some OU spring practice and preview the Masters. Then we give you our winners and losers of the week. Please download and subscribe to the podcast, rate it 5 stars, and write us a good review. Follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Just search Oklahoma Breakdown on any of those, and you'll find us. All right, our man Michael Hosty will kick this thing off. It's time for the Oklahoma Breakdown. It's a beautiful Wednesday, April 10th, and you're listening to the Oklahoma Breakdown with Eicher and Lehman, presented by Riverwind Casino. Riverwind is Oklahoma City's premier casino experience, and there's so many reasons why Riverwind is consistently voted OKC's number one casino, but it all starts with their amazing variety of gaming thrills and excitement. Riverwind's beautiful award-winning environment plays host to more than 2,800 of the latest electronic games, with a huge selection of table games, including blackjack, blackjack match roulette, and Teddy's favorite, craps. No matter what your game, Riverwind has it in spades and hearts. And to learn more about their gaming promotions and entertainment options in the month of April, all you got to do is visit Riverwind.com. Riverwind Casino, simply the best. Now, there's two main things this week in our sports world: OU spring football and the Masters. Mm. And we've got the perfect guy to talk both. The heart and soul of Zooterscoop.com is in the house. Eddie Radosovich, what's up, Eddie Rado? How we doing, buddy?
Gentlemen, yes, this is maybe one of the best, like, underrated sports weeks. I know that everybody gets excited, and rightfully so, for college football, but when you have National Championship Monday rolling into Masters Week on top of basically the ending of spring football rolling into spring game weekend, it doesn't get any better. So I'm excited. Good to be here.
Yeah, it is exciting stuff. And first of all, the big news dropped yesterday, moving the opener, moving it back to Friday. ESPN, SEC wanted to have the first game in prime time as a SEC football team. Is it small time? I heard some people saying it's small time football to play on Friday.
I mean, I think this conversation would be much different if you're talking about moving a Friday game in the middle of October or the middle of November. But I think this works out great for everybody involved. Not only is it on the front part of Labor Day weekend, but everybody else can sit around. I know for me, I can sit around and watch games Saturday and Sunday leading into Monday. I love it, though. I love the idea of a Friday night game. You're taking advantage of a TV window that you're going to be the only game on in the country. And, I think that in a way it could be really, really cool. Now, I hope that, and I think that Joe C said this yesterday when they made the announcement, this isn't going to be something that you see a lot. And I think that's a good thing. But in this instance, I think it kind of matches up with everything. And, oh, by the way, you don't have to play at 11 a.m. on Saturday at the end of August, beginning of September. And I think anybody that is watching this knows how miserable that can get. So I love it. I think that it's still going to be hot, but maybe you get a little bit of a reprieve by, 6:30, and you have a whole day of tailgating. So it should be awesome. I love it.
Maybe the most important thing is that we can all get to the lake on Saturday now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's perfect. And, I think that just in the instance of, for us working and stuff, like, Labor Day has never really been a traditional holiday. We're still on radio doing all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to try to take advantage of it. Might have to already just put in and say I won't be there on Monday.
I love it. I love the strategy. Now, want to talk some OU spring ball with you.
Yeah.
You guys have been able to see maybe more spring practice this spring ball than you've seen in all the other spring balls combined. Like, what has it been like for you to have that type of access and to be able to see the amount of practice you've seen?
It's been incredible. I legitimately think that I've been to practice more times, you know, during this 2-week period since they returned from spring break than we probably had been to in maybe the last 10 years combined. I mean, we'd gotten 25 minutes here, 20 minutes there, you know, with Riley and then obviously with Brent, but it's been awesome. And, you know, just being out of practice and being able to come back for the podcast or go back to the, you know, the message boards or wherever and be able to talk about like what you actually see as opposed to secondhand information and talking to sources and that stuff. So it's been a lot of fun. You know, I think that the one thing that jumps off the page is just how different that defensive back group looks. I know that you guys have talked about it just in sheer size. It's kind of incredible what they've done, you know, at cornerback under Jay Vlai. And then obviously what Brandon Hall's done at safety. It's night and day different when you see somebody like Robert Spears Jennings running around. So there's a lot of excitement there. I would say that, you know, we haven't been able to see a whole lot of the offensive line. And I think that that's kind of where every conversation begins when you're talking about Oklahoma offensively is what they're going to have up front. So it's been awesome. The, I mean, the hour and 30 minute viewing period, it did get to a point of like, okay, I don't know if I could do this every day and would want to come out here and watch these guys go through individual drills and stuff like that, but it's been a ton of fun. And, you know, I'm kind of excited to see how everything goes on next Saturday when they actually get out there and somewhat compete in a glorified practice.
Now, whether it's, you know, the young early enrollees, the freshmen or transfer portal guys, or even just, you know, guys that redshirted, we just didn't see a whole lot of in the fall. Has there been any guys, maybe even a couple of guys that have maybe stuck out more than anyone else that you've seen, offense or defense?
Yeah, I mean, we did a YouTube show, George and I did yesterday, just talking about kind of the newcomers. And I think that like the guy that you walk away from every practice and feel much better about that position group, and not just because of the depth, but Bauer Sharp's been really impressive every time that we've been out there. He looks like a guy that I don't really know what I was expecting when you sign in a guy from Southeastern Louisiana, but certainly a guy that is going to probably be the starting or one of the starting tight ends. I'm really excited. I keep saying it, and I know it sounds crazy. I think Caden Helms looks incredible. If you can just continue to get him on the field over and over and over again with all the injuries that he has had to kind of battle through. And then, you know, it's hard not to look at that defensive line group and see just the sheer size that Jaden Jackson or Nigel Smith or obviously David Stone have here as freshmen. And, you know, and then, you know, like I said, you get into that safety group. And I think that when you start talking about what they could do with the defensive backs and just the sheer number of guys that look like they have the ability to play, it's kind of exciting. And, you know, we'll see how everything goes again on the offensive line. But I'm really excited about Bauer Sharp. And then just seeing Deion Burks run around, like he's one of those guys that you can spend 5 minutes out there and they might just be jogging around. And it's like, yeah, this guy is very, very fast. You don't need to see a whole lot of him from an opening up standpoint. But it's been kind of cool to see some of these guys. And, you know, like even an Ivan Carrion that I don't think a lot of people really knew a whole lot about coming out of high school. Just physically, he looks like somebody that could be somebody that maybe even gets into the lineup this season as a freshman. So I know he's had a couple good scrimmages. So It's kind of night and day from what it's been, but you know that, you know, you have to continue to build that thing and it'll be interesting. Even today, they have Trent Wilson making his announcement on Wednesday evening. So if they can just keep stacking bodies on the defensive line, I like where that thing's headed.
You've mentioned the safety group a couple of times. Is that the position group that has impressed you the most with what you've been able to see at practice, or is there another group that maybe has impressed you even more?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the safety group is fantastic. And when you realize that Billy Bowman is basically, you know, every time that we've been out there, hasn't really been doing a whole bunch. He's been basically coaching the guys, but you just see the sheer size of some of the guys, even a Jaden Hardy as a true freshman, you know, certainly looks the part. I know he impressed Josh down at the Under Armour game back in the beginning of January a lot. So they look really, really good. And it's almost kind of night and day different, not to like just completely bash somebody, but you know, just from where they were a couple years ago and having to throw the same guys out there all the time. It seems like there's a healthy amount of depth there. Another newcomer at the quarterback position that certainly looks the part. I think Des Malone looks fantastic. And when you talk about just what the depth is at that quarterback position, being able to rattle off 5, 6, 7 guys' names, it's kind of exciting to see where that's moving and where it, and knowing and remembering where it has been. It's completely night and day different.
What do you think the overall ceiling is for the defense? The secondary you just mentioned is athletic. They're big. There's experience in there. You could say the exact same thing about backer. I think everyone would agree the weakness is probably corner and interior defensive line, but still, I mean, it's got to be a pretty high ceiling, right?
Yeah, it's almost to the point if they would just have Jacob Lacy and one more proven interior defensive lineman, you could start talking about, you know, this defense could be, I think on paper, they're already probably one of the better defenses Oklahoma's put on a field in maybe the last decade, just from a talent perspective. And then you add in all of the returning guys that have loads of experience at every level of the defense. I just wish they had two more interior guys that you could really know that you could count on. And I think that's why you fall back on, this is a big year for Grayson Halton. This is a big spring to kind of take that next step. Devon Sears sounds like he's had a really good spring. You just kind of fall back on what was the situation with him a year ago. Were you just seeing more Jacob Lacy? Were there other guys? Jonah Lu'ulu obviously had a good year. If they can just continue to progress, maybe get somebody in the portal. The Blitty guy from Indiana is coming in the spring game weekend. It certainly seems like they're going to add at least one or maybe two on the offensive and defensive line through the transfer portal during the spring. You feel really good about it. And I think that, when the concern is on the offensive line and just kind of the uncomfortable conversation of Jackson Arnold's still going to have freshman mistakes next season, even though he feels like he's been the starter for longer than just one game, you're going to need to rely on the defense. And particularly when you go to a place like, say in Auburn at the beginning of the year, turn the ball over 2 or 3 times, defense is going to have to bail you out. So I'm excited about it. I think that when you look at what Brent does and where every stop he's been, that third year has been a significant jump from even where year one to year two was. And, certainly when you look at that schedule, they're going to need the defense to be pretty damn good in 2024.
Sticking with the defense, you've been able to be out there for some really long stretches. What have been your early impressions of Zach Alley and just his effect on what they're doing defensively and maybe also his effect on what Brent Venables is doing in practice?
Sure. Yeah, it's been noticeable. Zach Alley, he basically runs in specifically that linebacker group that I remember going out even during preseason camp last year. Brent would basically run that thing. And I think that, Zach has come in and there's an obvious amount of trust there for him to kind of be able to do his own thing. And, I think that more than anything, he's definitely kind of stepped into a role of the good cop versus maybe Brent being the bad cop. I think Danny kind of said it best when explained things a little bit in maybe a more clearer tone. And obviously, his age probably helps in doing that. I know that that was probably one of the reasons why James Skalski really kind of endeared himself to that linebacker group, is he was able to really kind of maybe explain things a little bit more in depth or maybe in a more nicer tone than Brent would. But I'm excited about it. It's going to be kind of fun to see what his differences are just in terms of what he wants to do in calling a defense and if he's actually going to be that guy come fall. So I think, we haven't really talked to him yet. We've just been able to see him, out coaching at practice, but I think that there's an obvious reason why he was so, highly acclaimed coming in from Clemson and, all the other stops that he made, obviously Jacksonville State. And it's going to be a lot of fun because he's taken over a defense that certainly isn't lacking any type of experience, particularly at some key positions.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to the deal. Listen to the deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now, you mentioned that, yeah, we're going to be good on defense, and it's a good thing because we do probably expect some early mistakes from Jackson Arnold. What have you seen from the quarterback position? How's he looked? I know a lot of people have been talking about Michael Hawkins. What's really stood out to you there?
Yeah, I know that Michael Hawkins kind of been the talk of the camp when it comes to the quarterback position in a way.
Well, Jackson was last year, too.
Sure,
how it goes.
It's always the new guy on the block. And I think that a lot of it, too, has to do with what you're doing up front and, you know, not being able to maybe block some stuff when Jackson's behind there, as opposed to maybe playing against a scout team D when, you know, maybe Michael's in there and that kind of stuff. It's been interesting, though. I think that, like, for Jackson, this is a really important spring, obviously. I think that, you know, there's obviously a lot that he needs to improve on. Get more acclimated with what Seth and JoJohn want to do offensively. So, you know, I think that like that's the biggest question mark at the end of the spring, particularly for Jackson, is how much did you improve over this course of what is a really, really important month and a half, 2 months. And I think that when you look at like specifically when we've been out at practice and you're just able to see the different style of receivers that they have, whether it be the big guys like a Jaden Gibson, who's had a fantastic spring, Nick Anderson building off of what was an outstanding freshman season. And then, you know, more of the slot guys like a Deion Burks, or, you know, I think somebody that has kind of gone on the radar a little bit is Jaquez Petaway. It's kind of exciting to know that like he has some fantastic pieces around him. He just has to continually make that next step. And, you know, I don't think that anybody is necessarily saying that he needs to be in New York City at the end of the year, next year, or anything like that. But certainly, you know, get away from some of the mistakes that we saw in the Alamo Bowl. And if you can do that, I think that, you know, obviously there's a reason why everybody that you talk to in Norman feels like he's going to be kind of the next great quarterback down there. It's kind of fun, but I still just like, you think back to like how quickly everything came under Riley, and particularly the success that Caleb had. I don't want to like just get people's minds almost thinking that this is all of a sudden going to be a top three offense again in the country, as opposed to, I think what it actually is going to be a offense that is, has a lot of really, really nice pieces. It just needs to continually come together, and specifically up front.
With Levy moving on to Mississippi State and Seth Luttrell and JoJohn Finley taking over, have you seen any glaring differences and what the offense is looking like when you've been out to practice, or does it look pretty dang similar to what we've seen these last couple of years?
It looks pretty dang similar. Now, I would say that like from a, like a, just a straight team aspect, we haven't seen a whole lot of that. It's been a lot of 7-on-7 stuff. It's been a lot of routes on air, that kind of stuff. But you know, I am kind of interested to just see just in general what Seth wants to do. I would love to see the tight end position be utilized more, because I do think that like, even after Bauer Sharp and, you know, obviously Devon Mitchell, I think that there are some guys, whether it be a Jake Roberts, who, you know, has been limited this spring, you know, certainly is going to play quite a bit. I still think that Cade McIntyre somehow, some way fits onto the football field. He's just a great football player. And then, you know, particularly the run game, I've loved what I've been able to see just from guys running. They look incredible physically, just from like on the hoof. But we haven't seen a whole lot of like team stuff and actually being able to see what they want to do offensively. And I guess that's why you look at the spring game as kind of a an exciting time just to be able to see the, you know, I guess the debut of whatever Seth wants to do. I think it'll look something similar to last year, but also kind of very different in a kind of a weird, strange way. I know one thing, there's not going to be anybody that is going to be beating Oklahoma in dip cans per capita out of the offense coordinator room.
That's true.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah. How different does it feel? we've been talking about it for years. Oh, we're going to the SEC and it's here. We know what the schedule is. How different is it looking at the team, knowing what the schedule's going to be? Do you even think about it at all?
I mean, I think that like the good thing, and particularly talking about scheduling when we were talking about it on Tuesday, it's a good thing they're playing four games at home to start the season. I think that they really got a break not having to leave Norman until basically the end of September. You know, obviously Tennessee is going to be coming to town, but I think that like the front part of that schedule is challenging enough in a way, just in names alone. I don't, you know, certainly don't know what Temple's going to be bringing. I would expect Oklahoma to be a couple touchdown favorite, but at the same time, it's a decent program that has had decent years here over the last couple, even a Tulane in a way that will challenge you enough to get you prepared for what's to come. Because I don't think that anybody particularly knows what Auburn's going to look like when OU makes that trip, but I do know that it's not a game that you're going to be able to go down there and turn the ball over three or four times. There's not very many of those games, if any at all, on the Oklahoma schedule. It can be scary at times when you look at the back end and you see Alabama and LSU and even, you know, the Missouri game that's going to be hyped up into something, you know, pretty large, I would imagine, by November 9th. So it's challenging. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, if you can get to a 9-3, if you could slide that in there, I think you'll probably be in that 12-team conversation at the end of the year. And I think, you know, if you could just get to that conversation, talk about a fantastic year in the SEC. It's a little scary though, but it's been a long time coming too. It just feels like this thing has been out there for forever. It feels like that Brent Zwerneman article about OU and Texas moving was literally like a decade ago. So long time coming, but I mean, when you talk about excitement around a program right now, just with everything that comes with the move, it's fantastic. I can't wait.
I think excitement's a great word for it, but with what you've seen so far through spring ball, and maybe this isn't an unfair question, but do you feel better or worse about how things are going to go in year one in the SEC?
I'm pretty optimistic about what they could be defensively. I think that, you know, with all the reports that have come out about Oklahoma offensively and just the sheer questions up front about who are going to be some of these guys that can slide into starting roles, like, I feel pretty damn good about the guard position with Fabechi Wuwewu and Heath Ozaida. Outside of that, you could really have some serious conversations about every other position group, maybe Jacob Sexton if he's healthy. And I think that, like, for this offense and for them to go win football games on the road, you're going to have to be able to do, you know, the fundamentally sound things to win football games, be able to run the football, be able to block, you know, pass block for Jackson and that kind of stuff. It just leaves me really questioning like where this thing is at. And I know that Bill's going to figure it out. Maybe you can slide in somebody at center if, you know, Troy Everett is going to be out until August, or maybe Josh Bates, you know, kind of has a little coming of a moment and ends up being that guy by August or September. It's just, it's a little bit worrisome where that thing is at. And I would like to see a little bit more depth, but, you know, again, when you look at some of the guys that they have at skill position wise, just give him enough time. I think he can get the ball out. They're going to be pretty damn good. But, and again, it's like, I think when we talk about like, and I think that we also get caught up in this, like, oh, this offensive line isn't any good. I think it's probably somewhere in the middle of the SEC, Gabe. I don't know. What do you think? Maybe middle of the SEC, which is good. It's a good group, but can you go win 9 or 10 games? That's kind of the big question mark.
I just think it's hard to predict what the group's going to look like because I do think, just like a lot of other schools, Oklahoma's going to be very aggressive in the spring portal window. Sure. So I don't know what it's going to look like. I know this. I trust Bill Beedenbow.
Yeah.
To get it right, to maximize the pieces that he's got. I don't know exactly what the pieces are going to look like when training camp rolls around.
It's been like the last three springs. It's been a while since we had a group where we knew who everyone was going to be rolling into, you know, into spring and into fall.
So it's worrisome, but again, it's like, I think that a lot of people will listen to this and go, God, this is not a good situation. I don't think it's necessarily like push the panic button. I'm talking about getting to the college football playoff, competing with the upper echelon of the SEC. Like, I think that everybody that would listen to this would know that, like, that's where Oklahoma is expected to be. I don't think it's going to be just a terrible group, but I think that there's steps that could be made into what could be a really, really good group.
Well, building off of that, what's going to be the ridiculous take coming out of the spring game, whether it's good or bad? What can you predict what it's going to be? Like, someone's going to, like, I don't know, who's like the four string running back that's going to have like a 200 yard day that needs to be the starter?
Emeka Magwa goes for $175, and all of a sudden he's in the Heisman Trophy conversation. It happens every year. It was really funny coming off the second scrimmage last week. We were talking about it on the unofficial 40s. Like, haven't really heard PJ Adebore's name much this spring. Is that worrisome? Is kind of the conversation we had. And then he comes out and he has a sack in the scrimmage. So I think that, you know, that's kind of what this time period is for, is the hot take certainly out there. You know, I'm already fearing like Tyler Keltner or Zach Schmidt miss like a 45 yard field goal and 35 mile per hour winds that we know will usually happen during the spring in Oklahoma. And all of a sudden it's like, well, Doug Deacon doesn't know what he's doing. They haven't fixed the kicker position, all that kind of stuff.
Season tickets.
Yeah. Well, nobody's going to the game anyways, because it's a Friday, but it's going to be, I think that there will be somebody. Maybe an Ivan Carrion goes off for like three receptions for $175. It's like, he should start in front of Nick Anderson or something. It's like, pump the brakes a little bit. There's going to be something, or there's going to be, Jackson throws two picks. Maybe one goes off a receiver's hands or something. And it's, well, he'd never fixed the turnover issues that, which, you know, to a certain extent could be true, but at the same time, I don't think it's anything to worry about at the beginning of April.
We'll get you back to the interview. But first, Love's Travel Stops is now offering a nationwide 10 cent per gallon discount on gas and auto diesel. Just download the Love's Connect app and scan your barcode at the prompt on screen and watch that price drop 10 cents per gallon. Across the country, the Love's Connect app unlocks exclusive deals can help any traveler plan their route or meal on the highway. So before you hit the road, be sure to download the Love's Connect app to save 10 cents per gallon and experience the country's best highway hospitality at Love's Travel Stops. Love's also has you covered if you forget your phone, charger, or headphones with their expanded mobile to-go zone. And of course, don't forget to grab yourself some of that delicious Java Amore.
And celebrate with a Schooner All-American Ale, the official craft beer of OU Athletics from Coop Ale Works. Named after the iconic Schooner that races across Owen Field after an OU score, you can join in on the celebration with an ice-cold beer from Coop Ale Works. You can enjoy it at the Palace on the Prairie, at OU Athletic events, at the bar, at the tailgate, and in the comfort of your own home. For more information on Schooner All-American Ale, visit schoonerale.com. Must be 21 to purchase. Please drink responsibly. Schooner All-American Ale, the taste of game day.
And we love Simple Modern. Simple Modern is an Oklahoma-owned drinkware company who launched the best cups it's ever made with its new signature line this month. They are 100% leak-proof, which is what everyone needs with an on-the-go cup, and it has a ceramic coating on the top of the double-insulated stainless steel to preserve the beverage's taste while still keeping it cold or hot for hours. And even better, Simple Modern exists to give generously, donating 10% of all profits, so you can know you're helping better Oklahoma and beyond with every purchase. Check it all out at simplemodern.com today. All right, back to the interview. Let's shift gears. Is it your favorite week of the year?
It's up there. I mean, I think OU Texas certainly is probably number one. Masters week, I think, it's one of those weeks that you take in every piece of content, you listen to every podcast, you try to envision being there and going through everything that those guys are going through, or the people or your friends that are there posting pictures. It's truly, like I told somebody earlier this week, and I say it every year since I went in 2019, it is, outside of like an OU Texas experience, it's one of the only sporting, maybe not even sporting, just events in general, that truly lives up to the hype and then some. And you walk away like almost kind of without words to be able to describe what you have just gone through. So it's amazing. I, you know, obviously bucket list, it should be on anybody's list. It's truly kind of a special place. And I think that when you hear the guys talking about it, whether it be the, you know, Tiger Woods or Victor Hovland or guys that are playing for the first time this year, it's just a unique kind of cornerstone, milestone type of place that you got to get to if you're a golf fan.
Now, I saw this really cool thread yesterday. I don't know who it was, and I don't know what year it was, but it was kind of Tiger, or one of the years that he won, like all these shots of him in the fairway where he was like 130 out, 115 out for his approaches. And the course has gotten, I think it was like 600 and something yards longer since then. Like, what is the layout looking like? Is there anything new? Conditions, just what's, paint the picture of the course for us.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Fred Couples put it out there on Monday, possibly when he was talking to the media, just talking about, they've been really lucky weather-wise this year. I know that there's expecting to get a lot of rain on Thursday, which kind of makes for an interesting weekend, but all reports firm as possible, maybe the firmest that the course has ever been with the lack of rain in Augusta here over the last couple of months. I know that it is in outstanding shape, even for what the standard is for Augusta National, which makes it kind of exciting. Going back into last week at the ANWA, the women's championship, they were all talking about how firm it was, which makes it kind of exciting because you're talking about a second shot golf course. You're talking about, you know, being so precise. Victor Hovland talked about it. It was pointed out on the Shotgun Start podcast. Andy Johnson was talking about Victor Hovland, just kind of talking about like number six, more than ever, you're going to need to hit it high enough to be able to be rewarded, to hit it close to the pin. But it's also one of those courses that maybe more than ever, you're going to have to hit it to specific spots on the green, which is, you know, kind of gets into the conversation of who the favorites are. You're going to want a guy that, you know, really, truly strikes the golf ball well, and particularly with the irons. And, you know, I think that that kind of leads into the conversation of Scottie Scheffler and just the type of, you know, past year and a half he's had and how dominant he's been and why he goes into this weekend as the odds on favorite. So I'm excited about it. I know that they've made a couple changes to the course. They do every year. Jordan Spieth talked about how sharp some of the edges were and, you know, being able to hit it here versus being able to hit somewhere else in years past, and you'll really be punished for it. And that's why I think that when you look at some of the, you know, the last couple of years, or, you know, certainly the last 5 years, and the guys that have won the tournament, really good around the green, really good at lag putting, and really good at chipping. And, you know, that's certainly where Hideki Matsuyama excelled, John Rahm's excelled last year, and even Scottie Scheffler, you know, 2 years ago. So it's, I'm excited for it. And the crazy thing is going into this year too, is nobody outside of Scottie Scheffler is really like truly had an elite year. There's some guys that are coming into form, but at the same time, you fall back on the idea of this is a course that usually experience matters. It's a course that, you know, certainly the guys that know how to get around the course always find success. And that's what's going to be kind of fun going into this week is Scottie's been so damn good. It kind of lumps everybody else together in this big, you know, kind of pool. It's going to be kind of fun to see who jumps out of that.
Yeah, it feels like if Scheffler putts well, then he's going to win. But
yeah, and like, I don't want this to happen. Love Scottie. Wouldn't mind seeing him win. I don't want to look up at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon and whoever, whether it be Scottie or whoever, but somebody have like a 4-shot lead. That would be. Right. That would be not what we want out of a Sunday.
What do you think about? Yeah. What do you think about John Rahm? It made the move to live. Does now clearly the defending champ knows the course well. Does him making the move, does that change how you view his chances of being in contention this weekend at all?
No, not at all. And even the fact that he hasn't really played just terribly great. And maybe even that often. Now, the Live guys are coming off of a tournament last week in Miami. You know, they played Doral, which is always a tough course. But I think John Rahm has kind of proven that in these big ball games, he's going to show up. And I would expect nothing less. Like, I would be very, very surprised if he didn't top 15 at the very least this week. He's just that good of a golfer, and he's kind of been lost in the mix because of the move to LIV. You know, you don't see, you know, I guess in a way his name out there. Now, like, there is like a flip side of it, because he is such a psycho on the course that if he doesn't play well, and he kind of talked about it a little bit on Monday, just in terms of not necessarily self-doubt. I don't think that he has that. But if things were to not go well, maybe he starts questioning about how he prepared for the tournament. You know, that could get interesting just from a pure entertainment standpoint of seeing him lose his mind. But I think John Rahm's going to be, you know, certainly in contention. I'd be surprised if he did not play well this week. He's just, you know, simply that good of a player.
Now, you said it would be cool if Tiger had a four-shot lead on Sunday, which it would. You know, just thinking back to how awesome that 2019 run was, that was amazing. What are the thoughts? You know, I know he spoke a little bit and says that he's trying to pull it all together and maybe something will happen. Can he make the cut? Can he be, you know, on the front page of the leaderboard? Like, what do you expect?
I mean, you hear all the right things. I know Fred Couples said he was striping it. Zalatoris talked about on Monday he was driving it past him on a couple holes. It's just, you know, can he make it for 72 holes? I think he can make the cut. And, you know, I think that it's interesting this week and maybe historic this week, because he is going for the Masters record of made cuts. You know, he obviously made it last year before withdrawing. So it will be interesting to see kind of what Tiger is. I think that that's kind of the question mark. He hasn't played a whole lot. He played at Riviera and then had to withdraw when he got sick. It's always going to be a special moment when Tiger tees it up at Augusta National because of the history that he's had there, you know, obviously with the five wins. But at the same time, I think that there is like a realism there that, you know, probably not going to contend. I would love to say it. I would love to see it. You know, I would literally pay to see him in contention come the weekend, but it's going to be have to take like a magical week for him to do it. Now, like, the good thing is, and we talk about it every year with Tiger, like, he's probably knows the course better than anybody in the world. And I think that that certainly makes up for some stuff that maybe some other guys don't have just in terms of experience. So I would love to see Tiger compete. I think he is going to make the cut. But at the end of the day, to really say that he's going to be, you know, kind of standing in one of the final groups on Sunday, it'd probably be just straight Tiger fandom talking. I don't know if I could really kind of trust that.
That's fine. We all feel the same way. Pretty
much.
Awesome.
It would be awesome. He just has not played, and like, he's not healthy. He talked about it on Monday. It was really cool to hear hearing him just kind of straight up, I guess on Tuesday, talking about, you know, his love for the game of golf and that kind of stuff. Like, it brings you back to like growing up and watching him play. But at the same time, I mean, it is what it is.
And it's not an easy course to, like, walking is like the hardest thing for him, right? And it's not an easy course to walk.
Yeah, and I think that, like, one of the things he was talking about on Tuesday was just the fact that all of the undulated lies that you get, even in fairways, with how steep some of the side banks are and some of the mountains of hills are, it's not the easiest thing for him to just hit balls, let alone walk for 72 days. He's not in good health. It would, like, be... 2019 was phenomenal and basically coming out of nowhere to win the tournament. This year would be maybe one of the biggest stories ever in sport. I mean, it would simply be unheard of. I think he's like plus 450, and you know, in all honesty, if his name wasn't Tiger Woods, it wouldn't be that. So it's gonna be still fun. I'm gonna watch every shot. I'm a sicko that way. But it is, you know, certainly it kind of feels like the end here as we get to, you know, the back half of his competitive, you know, life just in general on the course. And, you know, anytime that he tees it up there, it's, you know, kind of spectacular in a way.
It's almost hard to believe that it's been 10 years since Rory McIlroy has won a major.
Insane. Literally
never won the Masters. But how is his game? Like, what's his form looking like coming in?
Before last weekend at Valero, I probably would have told you not very good. Now you look at like his season stats, he has 19th or worse in five of the six tournaments. That doesn't really tell the whole story though, because he had a T21 at Cognizant, T21 at Arnold Palmer, T19 at the Players, which top 25, still pretty good. And then, you know, last week he goes 69, 70, 72, 66 at Valero. and you go, okay, like you sucked me back in. So he has five top 25s this season. You know, I think that he's gone about it a little bit differently, just in terms of he didn't arrive to Augusta until Tuesday afternoon, kind of made a fly through of his press conference, didn't really spend a whole lot of time talking with reporters. I think that it's one of those things that, like, I love the idea of Rory being in contention on Sunday. And I think to a certain extent he will. It's just hard for me to say he's going to win like I did maybe 3 or 4 years ago, knowing his history with the course. And some people just maybe don't get over that hump. I would love to see it. When you look at the numbers, when you look at the metrics, he certainly lines up with shots gained around the green, shots gained with approach. I think that he certainly has the game to be able to do it. I just don't know if I can get there mentally thinking that Rory McIlroy is going to be the Masters champion this weekend. You know, certainly Scotty is the first name that comes to mind, but you know, when you look at the metrics, like I wrote it down because I think it is kind of somewhat important. 12 of the last 12 winners have gained at least 18 strokes or more tee to green in the four events leading up to the Masters. So there's 12 guys basically that have been able to do that this year. And it's kind of a who's who list. Let me pull it up. I wrote it down so I didn't screw it up. The last 12 winners have all done this. So there's something to it. They've gained at least 18 strokes or more tee to green. This year going in, Scottie Scheffler, Hideki Matsuyama, Xander Schauffele, Shane Lowry, Corey Connors, Siwoo Kim, Rory, Cam Young, and Hubert. I'm always going to call him Ludvig Åberg after being at Tech for so long. It's kind of weird. He's a rookie. He's never played in a major, but he's played in a Ryder Cup. So he's an interesting name to watch this week. But in short, Rory's metrics line up. It's just, can he get it done? And you're going to have to take advantage of the par fives. He's done that historically. I think 94 under par in his career at the Masters. It's just the par fours and the par threes that give him trouble. And particularly, you know, it felt like he kind of shook that first round bugaboo that had always kind of killed him. And, you know, you just hope that he can have a good first 36 and be within contention.
What all nuggets, storylines, like what all's going on out there that's kind of caught your attention that you're going to be looking for throughout the weekend?
I think that, you know, you start with Scotty. I think if he can go out and if he wins this weekend, all of a sudden that'd be his third win of the year. He repeated at the Players. He won the Arnold Palmer. If he can do that, I think that, like, everybody within the golf world is already talking about it. They've been talking about it, how good of a ball striker he is. You know, I think statistically he's getting to closer and closer to the Tiger Woods element of dominance of a sport. If he can win this weekend, I think that you start thinking about, like, higher aspects of what maybe people thought Scotty was. And I think people already think that he's a pretty damn good golfer. It would be just completely insane the kind of run that he's been on. But outside of that, I think the LIV stuff is really kind of interesting. Not so much like the bickering between the PGA Tour and LIV as much as the guys that are coming back over and playing. Joaquin Niemann is a name that, you know, I think a lot of people are familiar with. He's never been able to get over the hump in the majors when he was still playing on tour. He got a special exemption into the Masters this year, which is kind of interesting. Bryson DeChambeau, just seeing the guy, he's such a big goober that like the picture of him looking up at the eclipse on Monday was unbelievable content. But at the same time, he has not played at Augusta very good. In fact, he has shot 74 or worse in the last five rounds at Augusta and obviously missed the cut last year. So it's going to be interesting to see just kind of what those guys are. John Rahm's obviously in that mix. Brooks Koepka, who is just a killer when it comes to majors. You know, he's another guy that is kind of interesting. He's been going back and forth between putters this week, which, you know, I don't really worry about with Brooks because it just seems like it doesn't matter what happens. He's going to show up in majors and he's going to compete and play really well. Cam Smith's another name. I think he is number one in putting at Augusta National or in strokes gained around the green over the last 5 years. Those guys are really interesting just because you just don't know a whole lot about them. Like they put out stats, but they don't put out you know, like the analytic model of what you would want when looking at guys and seeing how they're playing going into this weekend. So the LIV guys are really interesting. You know, I think locally, Victor Hovland's kind of interesting because of what he's been able to do in majors, kind of one, another one of those guys that just shows up and competes and plays really well, particularly at Augusta National. He hasn't had a really good year though. And I think that like, that's fascinating for a number of reasons. Like the two guys that like continually come up that aren't maybe like the guys that you would automatically think of when you're talking about winning the Masters, Shane Lowry and Corey Connors are both guys that statistically play well at Augusta and analytically coming in are playing extremely well. And, you know, I think that I'll probably activate both of those guys on different fantasy teams going into this week. So it's kind of fun. It's also at the same time with the short field, with the past champions, you kind of eliminate a bunch of those guys. You still get down to the 15, 20-ish names that I think we always talk about this time of the year. But at the same time, the last 7 years, we've had a different winner every year. So it should be kind of fun to see who's going to jump up and get one this week.
Any guy that hasn't been able to break through and win a major yet that you think has got a good shot this weekend?
I really want to tell you Xander Schauffele, but he's kind of entered Rory mode where until he does it, I'm not going to be able to believe it. I'm not going to be able to say it with true confidence. But I mean, when you look at the guy's numbers, it's just insane. He has the third most birdies and eagles at Augusta the last 5 years. Him and Scotty are the only players in the top 20 in gaining shots off the tee, approach, and around the green, all three categories. Seven straight top 20 in majors. The guy's always in contention. He's always going to give him a chance. And it seems like this year he's coming in playing pretty damn well. It's just, can he get it done? Can he get over that hump? The other guy that might be a little bit closer that it's been awesome to see back on the PGA Tour this year, Will Zalatoris. I think that he is fantastic. He's actually, I think, second behind Cam Smith in shots gained around or shots gained putting on the green over the last like 3 years at Augusta, which is wild. When you talk about Will Zalatoris, you talk about how he's been shaky with the putter. He's gone to the long putter. I'm interested to see how that's tested on the speedy greens at Augusta. You know, I think that that is something that probably if he ends up not contending or, you know, not being there on Sunday, it's going to be because of his putter and not making a number of putts. So Will Zalatoris is really interesting, but it's, you know, I keep getting back to kind of the same guys. And, you know, much like Rory, a former champion and Jordan Spieth coming in off of just kind of a bonkers weekend down in Texas at the Valero. He contended. It's something about Augusta. He's another one of those guys that it feels like you just show up and all of a sudden you look up and, you know, he's in the mix. So it's going to be fun to see what Spieth does this weekend as well.
Well, he's annoying as hell. So I hope he's not around for the weekend, but
Michael Grell would probably agree.
what's the dream final pairing on Sunday that we want to see like battle it out for the win?
I mean, I think from like a obviously Tiger would be in there. I think realistically, you probably are talking about Rory getting in contention, having a chance. John Rahm certainly in contention. Maybe one of those LIV guys. And I don't even say maybe. I think that there's going to be a couple of those guys that are in the mix this week because they're such good players. Maybe that like PGA Tour LIV kind of rivalry. I don't know if people would still cheer for that. I think that it would certainly add intrigue to what is already, you know, just an absolutely bonkers and insane type of Sunday. But, you know, certainly Rory in the mix. I think that like I keep falling back on that. I think it would be really cool if he could get one, kind of get that monkey off his back, get him the Grand Slam, be able to truly kind of join those icons of the game in that regard. But, you know, I'm trying to think like, you know, the guys that just are coming in that you just have huge questions about, whether it be a Justin Thomas or a Colin Morikawa or, you know, even a Victor Hovland to a certain extent, Patrick Cantlay, guys that have kind of been knowns going into the majors here over the last couple of years, they're just not playing that well right now. And I think that like, that's where the kind of the gateway opens to maybe that top tier of guys being able to show up and really kind of make a statement. And, you know, if like somebody like a Phil could put together a run, I was listening to a podcast this week talking about, you know, how weird everything's been for Phil, just in his relationship with fans, just in general, in the game of golf here over the last couple of years with his role in LIV. That would be kind of cool. And I think that, like, while I don't think it's going to happen, I think that you would see a fan base that, you know, really kind of endeared themselves to Phil when he was making those runs on his way to winning the three Masters. I think that they would like kind of open back up as maybe as opposed to what they have been over the last couple of years when it's been kind of an uncomfortable situation for everybody involved. So anytime like a former champion gets involved, I don't know, maybe it's because it's like nostalgic and you remember those guys being in contention and winning. It always feels right that somebody, one of those guys, you look up and, you know, for the longest of time, it was Bernhard Langer looking up and he's somehow on the first page of the leaderboard and it's Saturday afternoon. Any of those like older gentlemen, I think would be really, really cool. But there is like a lot of really cool young American guys that, you know, particularly to me, that would be, you know, kind of cool, like a Russell Henley or somebody like that being in contention come the weekend.
So we have replaced Call Your Shot on this episode with Ask Eddie Anything.
Oh boy.
And pick two for you.
Okay.
They're both Masters themed. Okay, this first one comes from Jack Renfro. This is a really solid question. Who is Eddie's ideal foursome to play around at Augusta?
I guess anybody.
I believe you and I understand it, you are in the foursome. Who are the three other people in it with you?
Oof. Okay. I guess I would go. I mean, I think I'd have to take my dad, Tiger, and then one more. Man, I could go really controversial and go Trump just because I think that would just be absolutely bonkers. I don't know. I guess I'll kind of gateway out of this or scapegoat out of this. I'd say Jack Nicklaus, if, you know, he was obviously still able to play. I think that, you know, Tiger being my favorite golfer, Jack being the golf icon and, you know, probably my dad's favorite golfer, that would be, you know, super cool. We'd have to probably just
get the drunkest out of the group out of those four.
I think I probably would. I think that's probably for sure. We'd have to drop in on the wine cellars that they have off of in the cabins off of 10, which I heard is just absolutely insane for like wine nerds. But it would definitely be me. We would have to, maybe Sam could play in front of us. I know that he's been playing out there quite a bit, particularly over like maybe the last 2 weeks or so. But I've heard. But yeah, that would be super, super cool. Just being on the grounds is one thing. I can't imagine, you know, like Craig Humphreys has played the lottery a couple times that they give to media members on Monday after the Masters. It would be insane. I know that like they kind of, it's a watered down form of playing it. Like there's specific areas on where you have to play and it's kind of regimented and you play with a group that you don't really know the people. But I mean, just being able to take the sticks out there, showing up to the course with your clubs at Augusta, I can't imagine.
Would be unbelievable. All right, this last one comes from Nick Hermes. I don't know. Hermes. Sorry, Nick, if I messed it up. What would be on the menu if Eddie was the host of the Masters Champions Dinner?
I don't know what any of the food was that was on Jon Rahm's menu, but I guarantee you it was all phenomenal. It sounded amazing. I don't know what it was, any of that Spanish cuisine. I would probably go, steak is obviously the entree. We're getting some type of steak. I would want to incorporate Oklahoma in some way. Maybe you could have Cattlemen's send out the, what are the bull testicles called? Can't remember.
Calf fries.
Yes. Maybe send those out for like an appetizer type of situation. You would need like maybe some onion rings from Johnny's. This Augusta National members would be absolutely disgusted by my menu, by the way, because there would be a lot of Oklahoma stuff, like some onion burger sliders or something like that. I think Scotty serves sliders. So I think that's,
yeah, okay.
You go steak menu, you know, obviously maybe like a Caesar salad, some type of situation. And, you know, I'm just not much of a dessert guy. I know that's like insane because I'm a fat boy, but just never been a sweets guy. I really haven't. So like maybe a can of Zen and maybe a Marlboro Light for those that would want to partake out on the balcony or whatever at the clubhouse. So that would probably be it. Maybe something from, I'm trying to think, something from Mahogany, maybe like the sides from the ranch. I've always been, I've sided with the sides from the ranch as opposed to the steak from Mahogany, but we could figure it out. I'd have plenty of time. I wouldn't have to employ a chef like John Rahm did for his meal.
Throw in a round of lunch boxes from Edna's.
That could be the dessert maybe. And then get rolled into whatever that is, you know, on Tuesday night that maybe going over to Hooters in Augusta. Absolutely a round of lunch boxes. I'm sure that they would love that. The green coats would love that.
You're the man. You're the best.
Absolutely.
We always appreciate you coming on this week, man. You're just absolutely locked in when it comes to this week. I love it.
I appreciate it. Anytime. Always enjoy listening to the podcast, particularly these types of time of the year when, you know, basically we've been locked out for so many years, but it's been fun to get out to practice. And I don't know, like usually I kind of eye roll when you're talking about a spring game, but I don't know, for some reason, maybe it's the SEC stuff and everything that's to come. It feels like this one, you at least are getting good eyes on a lot of guys that are going to be contributing next year. And I, you know, to a certain extent, that's going to be fun. It's going to kind of whet the appetite before we get into summer, which I think is going to last forever until we get to August.
Appreciate you, brother. Thanks.
Absolutely.
That man is absolutely dialed in when it comes to the Masters. My goodness.
Oh man, what a national treasure he is. this is the week for him all year. This is where he gets, the most of his content in. Awesome stuff.
Fantastic. All right, let's finish up with our winners and losers of the week. But first.
All right, all you grill masters, listen up. Didier Ranch delivers premium quality beef that is 100% raised in Oklahoma right to your front door. Go to DidierRanch.com, DidierRanch.com to order one of their premium quality beef boxes and use promo code Oklahoma15. For 15% off your order. Filet, ribeye, New York strip, sirloin, steak burgers. They've got it all, and they ship anywhere in the continental U.S., and Oklahomans can get deliveries in just 1 to 2 days. The only thing better than having a lot of premium beef on the O&D line is having premium beef delivered right to your front door. Didier Ranch, tradition tastes better.
And head to the garage for hand-smashed patties, butter, toasted buns, and some ice-cold beer. If it's the perfect spot to watch any big game, and with all the garage locations being open to 10 p.m. or later every night, it is the go-to late-night spot. Visit eatatthegarage.com to find a location near you and order online from the garage in your neighborhood. As always, Ted, kicks off. Who do you have as your winner of the week?
Arkansas?
What?
Didn't see it coming, but... Arkansas snags Calipari from Kentucky. It's crazy. There's a lot of talk going on about, is he running from Kentucky, or I don't know. Like, that conversation I think is kind of dumb. Sometimes you just need a little bit of a change of scenery to get back in the swing of things. Sounds like they're going to be rolling out the carpet. The NIL is going to be ready to pop there at Arkansas. Like, that's a huge move for them.
Did you see his video announcing it? What was going on with the quality of that thing? What version of the iPhone does he have?
I don't know. First gen, those are worth a lot of money probably somewhere, but I made it like 10 seconds into the video. I was like, okay, whatever. I don't need to hear him talk about how great Kentucky was. I get it. But yeah, it's, I didn't see that whole thing happening. Which I mean, maybe nobody did, but that's pretty wild. And Arkansas's, you know, they kind of had some moments there under Musselman, but I mean, it's a good basketball program. It's been a while since they've been really in the action.
Does it feel like a win-win? I feel like Kentucky fans were kind of over Calipari, and Arkansas fans, I think they really liked Musselman, but when he jilted them for USC, I think they were pretty angry, and they've got to feel like they upgraded, right?
Oh, yeah, they have to. They have to. And I know that recently it hasn't been as good, but I think everyone's going to get new energy. He'll get new energy going to a new place. You know, his billionaire buddy, that's an Arkansas donor, is probably going to light up the NIL for him. Fan base is going to be super excited. It's going to, I think it's going to have a really good effect and probably go pretty well, for everyone. And you're right, Kentucky, it's like, I don't know how serious it was. It was probably a very small percentage of the fan base, but there were some people that were upset. And, well, you get to move on without having to fork over $33 million. That's pretty good.
That is solid. Now, I think it, Arkansas basketball, it's going to be a perfect test case of how quickly you can build an elite roster in today's day and age of college basketball, because they're going to spend a ton of money in NIL. And it's not like John Calipari has struggled when it comes to landing big time recruits. Now, that was at Kentucky. It's a little different. I understand that. But I think all of a sudden, other than, hey, can UConn three-peat, I think they become the most interesting story in all of college basketball next year, just to see what the roster looks like. Because the roster is pretty much empty there. So he gets to build it from scratch and do it his way. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see what it looks like even in year one.
Yeah. And I'm guessing in year one, it's going to be very heavy transfer portal. Like he's kind of gone back and forth between the recruiting deal and going young or the transfer portal stuff. You got to imagine right out of the gate, it's going to be transfer portal heavy and maybe fill in some good recruiting whenever they can. But it's a big move. Big move. Curious to see what happens at Kentucky now.
I'm just mad that when he was walking that dog, it wasn't in that stroller.
Okay, I saw the video. What's the stroller?
It's not uncommon with old dogs. So you take your old dog. I know a lot of people were making fun of him for it, but when you take an old dog on a walk, especially a small old dog, they can kind of just run out of gas and you set them in the stroller. I've never done it, but I know plenty of people that go with that method. And honestly, it's kind of sweet. I kind of enjoy it. I'm not going to lie. But yeah, it looks pretty goofy when you're walking your dog and like, I don't want to talk about it. I'm just walking my dog, guys. Leave me alone. I know it's maybe the biggest story in sports right now, but please leave me alone. The optics of it were just hilarious.
Yeah, I was just going to take the dog on a walk down Main Street. No big deal. It was pretty funny. I didn't know what was going on with that, but it does make sense. I have seen the dogs that just, they lay down and it's like, okay, I'm done. I'm not going any further.
Yeah, the stroller is in case that happens. So that's good awesome. For you, John Calipari. And I think both sides win in this thing. I am...
Great.
Beyond interested to see who takes the Kentucky job. Clearly a lot of guys are going to want that job, but we'll see who it is. Who do you have as your loser of the week?
I had to go with OU softball. We talked about it a little bit Sunday. It was series was 1-1 and they end up dropping the rubber match there on Sunday. And first series lost to Texas since 2009. The streak had to end at some point, and you know, I'm not panicking, think the team's just fine. Pitching was really good. Texas, what they won the last two games, just scoring two runs each. So not worried about it, but you know, you hate seeing Texas get that win.
It made me sad. It really did, because in my mind I was thinking, okay, they got the wake-up call they needed. You know, it came down to the last play of the game. It was an exhilarating finish. Like, hey, regroup, come back on Sunday, take care of business. And the bats just aren't alive right now, Ted.
Yeah.
When you're playing big-time competition. I know what they did on Tuesday. That is what it is. But when you're playing one of the other top tier teams in the country, just got to do more at the plate.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something that we really haven't had to worry about for quite a while. You know, different teams have different strengths and weaknesses, but it feels like during this latest run, dominant run that they've been on, like the bats have been the best part of what they do. So, you know, a little bit different to see the offense slow down a little bit, but again, not worried about it. I think every team has to play a little bit different role. And, you know, coming into this season, there was a lot of pressure, a lot of stress with the winning streak and all of that stuff. I mean, it's not like they're all of a sudden going to be some huge underdog nationally, but you could develop that mindset within the locker room, you know, that people are counting you out. So see how they respond.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. Is it one of those things where it ends up being a good thing in the long run? Because
it could be.
Patty Gasso can point to that, and especially it's your rival. It's Texas, man. So it hurts. It stings even more. It's one of those things that maybe she can use as a motivator the rest of the season. I don't know how exactly she operates when it comes to the psychology of all that stuff, but if there's any coach in the country, really in any sport, that I trust to be able to use it positively, it's Patty Gasso.
Yeah. I think they'll bounce back. They'll be just fine. That series with Oklahoma State is going to be interesting. You know, Oklahoma State has the series win over Texas, and that one's going to be enormous. That's going to be big. That's going to be, I'm guessing the Big 12 will be on the line in that one. So it's building. We've got, I don't know, I think Oklahoma State, Texas are all in the top five right now. Depending on what, you know, ranking you go by, what system put it out there, but going to be a fun ending to the season.
I'm not worried about OU softball. I know that we were all disappointed with how the Texas series ended up finishing. I'm not worried. I'm just not. I'm not worried until I see them lose in the Women's College World Series. I'm just not going to be worried. I don't know if that's right or wrong. That's just, I trust Patty Gasso in that program too much. I just do.
I will say, I mean, it's not that I wanted them to lose or anything, but it is kind of nice to have a little drama in the season, you know, like how's the Big 12 going to shake out? What, you know, used to there's no drama until like game two of the World Series final for Oklahoma. So this is a little bit of a change up that, okay, it's going to suck me in a little bit earlier.
I feel like it's possible that we're reaching, you know, the phase for UConn women's basketball?
Yeah.
When they just smashed everyone for years. And then more schools started investing money. They started taking it more seriously. They started realizing how popular it is. And other teams started getting better. And there were more talented women across the board playing the sport. I'm not saying that OU's going to go on a, what has it been, 8-year drought? I think it's been 8 years since UConn women have won. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think in a weird way, what we're seeing, like there's just going to be better competition. And I think you can point to OU's success as one of the main reasons why the competition is ramping up.
It's what always happens. Every time you have a dynasty in a sport, it makes everyone up their game to catch up. And when they finally do catch up, it's that harder to kind of regain and get the steam back rolling again to make another run. So it's overall really good for the sport, especially locally.
I would like to see them just destroy people the rest of the season, though. Let's be real.
I'd like to see them like just get it done enough to have like nobody pick him to win, you know, the championship, and then you just go run the table in the World Series?
I love the sound of that. All right, let's get to my winner and loser. But first, attention business owners, you need Insurica in your life. Insurica is one of the country's largest insurance brokers with 30 offices throughout Oklahoma, Texas, and the Southwest. Insurica is able to customize programs by accessing the latest information from many insurance carriers. They compare and contrast coverage offerings and pricing in order to design a cost-effective, comprehensive program to meet your business's specific needs. If your business partners with Insurica, you'll save huge amounts of money and take back control of your total cost of risk. If your business wants to be best in class, connect with Insurica at Insurica.com. That's Insurica.com.
And head to opolisclothing.com for our podcast merchandise and the best OU gear out there. That's OPOLIS clothing.com. Use promo code TED, TED, for 10% off. That's opolisclothing.com. Use promo code TED for 10% off, buttery soft, and 10% off.
Exploring the idea of maybe some men's swimsuits with Opolis. Yeah.
Okay.
Now we're trying to find a high quality one, but we're just, you know, for the summer, we're working on some ideas. We're trying to get something figured out.
Nice. I like that. That'd be cool.
For my winner of the week, thought about going with OU golf coach Ryan Hibble. Sent me this excellent Masters OU themed shirt. Now the only issue is I worked out and took a shower before we recorded, and I look at this, dude. It's not turning off. Look at this. I guarantee you some people watching this on YouTube are like, what is going on with Gabe's shirt? It's not supposed to look like this. This shirt is awesome. Thanks, coach. But I can't stop sweating. It's terrible. I'm just sitting. I'm going to have to change shirts when we talk to Eddie. I look ridiculous.
It's going to be so awesome on YouTube because as we've been going, it's just slowly getting...
It's so bad. I mean, I always thought when I lost weight that I would stop sweating so much. False.
It's probably false. Worse.
This is the ultimate shower sweat. It's like I got out of a pool. This is ridiculous. But
and the more you think about it, the more it.
Yeah. Just, it yeah. And I've even held off. I have a cup of coffee that I've held off on drinking. Because I was like, if I drink it, it's going to make it even worse. But at this point, it's so bad. Let's take it, you know, just a. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's just maximize this and embrace the awkwardness. Look at this. Look at the belly button. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
I am disgusting, but it's fine. Hey, it's fine. It's fine. My winner of the week, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jalen Williams back. Now, the first half against the Kings did not go particularly well. They were raining threes. Keon Ellis, credit to that guy. De'Aaron Fox, credit to that guy. I mean, when they hit 14 threes in the first half of that game, it was wild to watch. And I won't lie, it was a little discouraging. I was like, we got our guys back. Oh, my gosh, we're down 19 at halftime. But the NBA, it can change quickly, and a 39-point third quarter will change things quickly. And loved seeing them finish strong the way that they did. They end up overcoming what I believe got out to 20 points at one point. They overcome a 20-point deficit to win 112-105. I loved watching them battle through the adversity, Ted, but I think the most encouraging thing was how Shai looked. His quickness was back, his explosiveness, his first step, his ability to stop and start, his ability to get downhill and just blow by guys and get to the rim with ease. That was the key to getting to the free throw line as much as he did. I thought he looked fantastic physically, was creating space in all kinds of different ways with the step back. He was back to using that shoulder, that little chicken wing, to create space with guys. I just thought he looked full tilt, man. And he ends up dropping a 40 piece in his first game back from the quad injury. And we talked about it last episode. The most important thing when they get to the playoffs is Shai and J-Dub being healthy. That man looked as good as he's looked in a long time against the Kings. And I was just, they get the win. That was awesome. Yeah, that was great. But him looking the way that he did was my biggest takeaway from that game.
Yeah. No, that's what you want. Probably, you know, it's a long season and he's played a lot. Freshen up the legs a little bit, get healthy, and it's good to get back into the swing. You don't want your first game back to be a playoff game, right? So to be able to get in, break the rust off a little bit, get back into that same rhythm that you've had all season is perfect.
Keon Ellis hit 8 threes in that game. Yeah. It's just one of those reminders of how many good players are in the NBA.
It's crazy.
I mean, I was very angry with him with how well he was shooting the ball. But I also, once the Thunder won, I was like, dang, good for Keon Ellis. That was awesome. How about this stat? Domantas Sabonis, he had 8 points and 13 rebounds. It ended a double-double streak at 61 games in a row.
It's crazy. Crazy. He's grown into a very, very solid player. Happy for him.
I'm starting to get really, really excited about the playoffs.
What's the how we sit right now?
Denver and
Minnesota play.
Yeah, right now we are sitting in third. Denver and Minnesota play tonight.
Okay.
So that game is in Denver. I would assume that Denver's going to get that done. We'll see. But, yeah, we're currently sitting in third. Right now we would play the Pelicans in the first round. But Phoenix still in the mix, and the Lakers are lurking. The Lakers are lurking, Ted. They are – I think it'll be one of those three. You know, Sacramento's there as well. I feel good about all of those. I feel worse about matching up with the Lakers. But at this point, if Shea and Jalen Williams are healthy, we got our squad. Who cares, man? Let's go.
Yep. See what you got.
Home court against the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs.
Be awesome.
LeBron in Oklahoma City, the NBA playoffs. Yeah, sign me up, man. Let's go.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That'd be awesome. And they'd have to figure out a way to adapt, and the pressure would be on right out of the gate.
For my loser of the week, thought about going with the Milwaukee Bucks. They've been struggling. Free fall may be a little too strong, but it's been a struggle these last couple weeks for them. They get a nice win over Boston on Tuesday night, but at what cost?
Yeah.
That was, Ted, I watched Giannis just crumble, I don't know, 10 times. The most encouraging thing, he didn't look back to see if someone kicked him.
Yeah.
He just kind of went down, and who knows how bad the calf strain is, but it didn't look like he crumbled quick enough for it to be his Achilles just snapping. But you talk about horrible timing for an injury. I mean, it's the last week of the regular season right now, and there's no way he'll be back anytime soon. I mean, what,
those
2 weeks,
linger.
3 weeks?
Depending on how bad a bad calf can linger for a long time. And if there is some type of Achilles situation going on there, maybe it's not, you know, a rupture, but that could go on for a long time. Not to mention that you're talking about healing an Achilles area that's like 3 feet long. You know, it's an exceptionally long Achilles tendon. And I don't know. It's, the timing is not good, especially not playing well at the time, headed into the playoffs. I mean, you got to imagine it's a first round miss for him, right?
I know that he's superhuman. The Bucks aren't winning anything this year.
Yeah.
I almost think they should just, and if he's healthy enough, he's going to come back and play. I think he's one of the most competitive guys in the league. I love how he brings it night to night. But the Durant situation, remember when Durant came back? He had had the calf issue, came back. That's when he popped his Achilles. Mm-hmm. I just think there's too much risk in it for Milwaukee. I honestly just don't think it's worth it for them.
I mean, that's why I mentioned, like, the Achilles tendon being so long for those guys. When you get those micro tears in it, like, you've done some damage somewhere, whether it's the attachment all the way at the top or at the bottom, there's something going on there, and you're always at risk to blowing that thing up because it's so exposed.
I just can't imagine they'll rush him back. Yeah. They may have to protect him from himself. But, yeah, it was a scary video, and it's a bummer, man. Bucks are supposed to play the Thunder in Oklahoma City on Friday night. I was already mentally preparing to be shocked and awed by Giannis.
Have you seen him in person before?
Yeah, I've seen him several times now, but I feel like it's been a couple-year drought now, because I want to say he was hurt last time when the Bucks came to Oklahoma City last year. So we're kind of on a Giannis drought, which is unfortunate because he's just ridiculous to watch in person. He's enormous.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's nothing serious and he is back. I mean, because ultimately that's what we want, right? In the playoffs, we want to see all the best players in the league competing with one another.
Yeah, it feels like Boston is just undoubtedly going to come out of the East, but would I have minded watching Giannis try to steal that series from him? No, that would have been awesome if they would have matched up in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I don't know. It seems like things just have been a little weird this year in Milwaukee, and now your star is hurt with an injury you just cannot rush him back from. So I don't know. Bummer. But my loser of the week, the Purdue Boilermakers. Ooh. Yeah, hey, we got an entertaining first half. Mm-hmm. I mean, we absolutely did, but then UConn just choked the life out of them, Ted. And Zach Edey, he got his, ended up with 37 points. I think the way that he started that game, I felt good for the guy. He for whatever reason, appears to be kind of a polarizing figure. I don't enjoy watching him play, but how effective he was early in the game and the discourse that resulted from that, I thought that was a lot of fun. But what, that thing felt over with 15 minutes to go in the second half?
Yeah.
It was kind of a dud of a championship game. UConn's just too good, man. 2 years in a row, completely different cast of characters, too. Unreal.
I know. It is like when you're truly so much better than everyone else, it can appear very dull and boring. And that's kind of how it is watching UConn. They're just so good everywhere. It doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of like wow moments. It's just clean, efficient, get stops, get efficient looks on offense. They got great athletes out there that can do it all. They shoot well. They defend really well. It's all around really, really awesome. And what is that? Is that number six since like
99?
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, they have played themselves into blue blood status. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. And I just was stunned watching that game because, and credit to Danny Hurley and his players, they got Purdue to play exactly the way that they wanted them to play. They just got so spooked by the way that they were running them off the three-point line. And it's almost like they just accepted, hey, we got to throw the ball to Edey and just live with it.
Yeah.
And Purdue is one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country. And I understand that UConn's guards are much bigger. They're really good defensively. I'm not trying to take anything away from Spencer, Castle, Newton, Caravan even. But come on, Purdue, you got to generate some three-point looks. You have to adjust. Like, you can't just accept that, oh, hey, I guess they're not letting us shoot threes today.
Yeah,
they made one three, Ted, in the title game. They shot seven of them. I mean, Danny Hurley, I mean, that was an absolute dominant coaching performance over Matt Painter. Yeah. They just said, well, okay, I guess they're not going to let us shoot threes. You got to do something to generate the looks, guys. I mean, you can't just completely abandon it. And I felt like they did.
Especially whenever you're like, I understand, like, not wasting possessions, heaving threes, but that's if you've got other really nice options that are generating good, efficient looks. And that was just, it was hard to come by anything. At some point, whenever you're down, you've got to start firing, trying to spark a run, and the three ball's the great equalizer. So yeah,
I was about to lose it. And there's 3-4 minutes and they're still dumping the ball inside to Edie. He's shooting it off the glass. And that's where I was watching it. I go, I thought Purdue was a smart person school. Don't they produce a bunch of engineers and stuff? Isn't it hard to get in there? Aren't they supposed to be good at math? They just that sometimes, and this is a real thing now in today's day and age of basketball, you can't allow yourself to be out math. You can't shoot seven threes in a game anymore. You're just putting yourself at a massive mathematical disadvantage. It can't happen. And they just kind of just let it happen, or just let UConn, I don't know, just dominate the way that they were going to play offensively. I mean, credit to UConn. They're undoubtedly the better team, but I was stunned at the lack of urgency from Purdue to get 3-point looks.
Yeah. And it's not like they weren't really within striking distance at all. Right? It's one thing if you're just kind of hovering around, you're down 8, you're down 10, back and forth, little mini runs. No, not at all. Not the case at all. Like, you had ground to make up. So I don't know.
I didn't even think UConn played particularly well on the offensive end. They didn't shoot it that well.
Yeah.
Didn't shoot the three well, but just absolutely controlled the game. 12 straight double-digit NCAA tournament wins for UConn, and now back-to-back national champions. And I think you have to say Danny Hurley's the best coach in all of college basketball. Did it with two completely different groups. Utilize the transfer portal. Still, to say that guy coaches hard is probably a massive understatement. But I don't know, man. I feel like college basketball as a whole is like there's a lot of parity, except for this outlier in UConn, who's just these last 2 years been head and shoulder above everyone else.
Yeah, you kind of have that. I feel like we were talking about softball earlier. Kind of feels the same way in softball to some degree. You got a bunch of teams that are really good, kind of right there on that next tier. And it's pretty common. And I think the same thing will happen, though, eventually. Like, people aren't going to sit around and do nothing and watch UConn just continue to roll out championships. They're gonna try to improve. They're going to go work on their three-point shot a little bit, and they'll find a way to bring them down, maybe.
They're going to go hire John Calipari and give him $5 million in NIL money.
There you go.
I did think after the game, Hurley got asked about the Kentucky job. He basically goes, ask my wife. Pretty good. Birthday shout outs. Happy 36th birthday to the legend, Ryan Broyles. Let's go. Happy birthday, Ryan.
Awesome. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to Connor Wheeler.
On that note, episode 412 in the books. We'll have a new podcast that'll drop on Sunday. Just a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Tell all your friends about it too. There's still some OU fans out there that don't know we exist, believe it or not. Yeah, I know. tell them, listen, or you can watch on YouTube. Please subscribe to our channel on YouTube. Hope you all have a great rest of your week. Have a fantastic weekend. Until next time, we appreciate y'all for listening. Do what you always do, Oklahoma. Take care of each other.